Oh, the dulcet tones of Chris Cross, Mac Daddy gonna make you jump. Actually, Christopher Cross is the name that he used. And Karen Lyle joins us and at Salesport Talk, and we're about to do a pre-recorded interview that Karen did. But Karen, it's funny. First of all, how you doing there? You in the East Bay yourself right now?
I'm doing great. I can actually see Sports Byline from my window. I have a great view of the bay and all the bridges right out my bedroom window, which is where I am right now.
Well, I can see Alaska from my house. Oh, wait. I mean, I can see Soviet Union. I already ruined it. That was a Sarah Palin line. Anyway. do you know what's funny? And maybe it's not funny at all, but I bring this up in the middle of a pandemic. But Christopher Cross, you know, he had that song, and then he had the Arthur song, remember? Arthur, he does, is he pleased? Remember that old song?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So anyway, they said that we'll get to the interview here for a second. They said that when women fell in love with his voice, and then they saw what he looked like, and then they went, ugh. Isn't that mean?
Yes.
all right. What? Tell us about the interview. We got to go to it. What's going on?
Okay. So this is going to be a captain, Rick Saber, who was on the Diamond Princess that just recently happened in Japan and all of that kind of stuff. So we'll listen in.
All right. Let's go in.
This is Karen Lyle of Salesport Talk, and I am here talking with Rick Saber, Captain Rick Saber of Novato. He was a Navy pilot in Vietnam and also a United Airlines pilot. He is a sailor and a commodore of Richardson Bay Yacht Club and just had an amazing journey being on a cruise ship to China. Rick, can you tell us what ship you were on?
Yeah, it was the infamous Diamond Princess out of Yokohama, ex-Yokohama.
And this is just recently, and we're there at the very beginning of the crisis that we're currently experiencing. What was the moment when you understood that there was a coronavirus on board? How did that impact you?
I would say it was like a brick wall. We had expected, we were approaching Yokohama at night. The captain came on and said there has been a change. A lot of things have changed instantly. And we had a passenger that departed the ship mid-cruise going north in Hong Kong, and he turned up positive for the coronavirus. And I'd say probably most of us were not really very much aware of what the coronavirus was, how virulent it was, and what the dangers implied were, or how that would affect us. But he went in, and he was pretty transparent for the next 2 weeks on explaining every little detail that came to him in real time. So we became knowledgeable about this as we were approaching Yokohama, and we were going to get in 9 hours early, which is it's an extreme. And he said the reason for that, he was going to try and deal with the authorities on shore to see if we could still maintain a debarkation in the norm of the next morning, which certainly did not occur. And during the night, apparently, the health authorities put in a request that we all be quarantined, that we would be remaining in quarantine somewhere at the dock for the next 14 days.
You and your wife are both sailors, I believe. Is that correct?
Yep, for over 50 years. In fact, I still sail, and I'm in the Coast Guard Auxiliary as well, so I do vessel check, and I get to go out on a number of boats quite often, being a member of also the Corinthian.
How do you feel that being a sailor prepared you for what you were experiencing on
the ship? That's a really good question, Karen. Well, everybody knows a boat gets to be about an inch smaller per day when you're on an extended voyage. And sometimes I imagine it even goes down to maybe a foot a day. But being in a confinement can really be a jarring experience. In our case, we were on a balcony deck, so we had fortuitously booked that, and it made it very, very palatable. We got air, fresh air. We could see what was going on all the time. We could walk on our miniature deck and be out there in nature. And the comfort of the rooms are extreme. So I'd say, would I ever do this again, even with this coronavirus or even being on the same ship? In a heartbeat. It's in our nature to do to be near the sea. And we've been on, I don't know, 15 cruises. Mostly we prefer the small ones, the small ships like windjammers. But having had I've had six boats, so I know how small a boat is and how compact it is. And if you could imagine, a cabin is much larger typically than anything on a boat. So it really was not such bad confinement. But that's how I'd measure it up with being a sailor. And the food and everything they were bringing to us, you don't find that on any boat normally. So I would say the experience was hardly terribly jarring, except that you had to face it with hope and knowledge that this is the way it was going to be, and you really had little choice.
So you are a captain who flies on a plane, and when you came back and the quarantine was continuing and you were leaving the ship, you were not in charge, so you weren't at the helm.
Flying in the cockpit is just being okay. In command.
Right.
And I think that I had the same kind of an adjustment with the captain. Interestingly enough, somehow I got one of the very few invitations up on the bridge while we were underway, and I got to talk to him very directly. And there's a tremendous parallel between a ship captain and a sea captain and an airplane captain. So I found that we could speak on the same language in most cases. And one of the funny things is that my wife asked him a question. She was with me, and she says, "Well, Captain, what's it like to be in command of such a beautiful ship? What's the best part?" And he said, "Well, approaching a new port or a port or departing the port." He says, "I love the experience, and I love the challenges." Little did he ever see what was coming down the pike only about a week and a half later, when we were all beset by the beast.
It's kind of like when you're out there on a boat and there's a storm that comes up. You don't always know that that's going to happen, but your emergency preparedness is something that really kicks in. What would you say would have been one of the things that stands out for you that this captain and ship were prepared for that surprised you?
I would say that if I had the ability to have done everything that he had done in advance of being forced into quarantine and all the things that ensued, I think he did an exceptionally fine job, and I would only hope that I was half as good as he was. You asked another good question, though. What's it like being normally in command and then not being in command of your own destiny? And I think that we're all prepared for that. I have trust in the standard operating procedures and the fact that you put yourself in the hands of professionals all the time. And it's comforting to know that they're dealing with tremendous efficiency, backup, and staffing that are all very much in alignment with making it a safe voyage for everybody. So I had no questions about that, and I think he did everything right. So I was, I would say that in my long experience as being a pilot, I'm prepared, just like most people that are sailors, for any adverse condition that settles in on you. And I don't think anybody shrink from that. You build a lot of experience, you build a lot of confidence, and you have confidence in others, hopefully, rightfully placed.
This is Karen Lyle of Sailsport Talk, and I am talking with Captain Rick Saber about the experience that he recently had on the journey to China. Rick, tell me also, what is it that you experience when you were going from the ship to the plane, and then you had that opportunity to not know where you were going?
I think I'd reflect on what everybody felt, frustration. Going through getting off the ship, everything happening on the ship, and the processing off the ship was exceptionally professional. Dealing with the people on the ground, and I think that was either the State Department or the embassy, they managed to create a snafu that challenged, I think, most of us, and in that it took an undue amount of time, an additional 5-6 hours of lost time, and with no ability, no porta potties around, and everything, it was tough. And people that were handicapped were even more challenged, you might say. We finally got out there where they had to leave the ship to get to the airport, because they had a certain time they had to depart. So 450 people. And I don't know, the way they took them and they documented everything with our photos, you'd think that they'd have had this thing down to a science, but not the case. And in fact, we didn't know that until we started just before taxi, when one of the five doctors stated that you probably wonder where we're going, and that's to San Antonio, Texas. Well, kind of an uproar came up, but we considered that's where we're going. So that's what happened. And it was a 12-hour flight inside the belly of the beast of a big cargo plane, an old 747-400, which I may have even flown when it was still a commercial airliner. And the flight itself was uneventful. The landing down there was in minimum conditions in cold fog, and we were lucky to get in. And then we were processed properly and efficiently through that to be repatriated and then sent to quarters that were excellent.
What advice would you give for people who are going into self-isolation to help prevent the spread of the COVID-19 virus at this time as to how to keep their spirits up? You know, as a good old Commodore and a sailor and a captain, do you have some advice for us?
I'd say everybody that's been out on the bay has their own built-in confidence and self-reliance and resourcefulness. And I'd say that most everyone in that capacity that has done that are unique people. They've been out there in nature. They know what changes, and they know how to face it, face adversity very straightforwardly. And I don't think that they'd be in bad conditions. They'd probably be resourceful enough.
This is Karen Lyle from Sailsport Talk. Last year, we interviewed Captain Kurt Bocher of the BAP Union, a four-masted 115-meter long bark with 34 sails belonging to the Peruvian Navy. I was so impressed by this Peruvian captain and his crew of young men and women. The captain and I exchanged ceremonial plaques aboard the ship to symbolize the friendship between California and Peru, and we have been talking by text for 12 months now. When Captain Bocher was in our San Francisco studio, I asked him about his ship's mission. Let me share again his response.
VAP stands for Peruvian Navy Ship. It's Peru's tall ship. It's a training ship for the Peruvian Naval Academy. It has two parallel but complementary missions. We train our future officers in the arts of seafaring in the tall ship, but we are also, as you said earlier, an ambassador of Peru to the many countries and ports that we visit. We think that to be a naval officer, you have to be also a good citizen. You have to have an education that covers different areas of civil society.
Right now, Peru is also battling COVID-19, as are we all. Captain Bocher just sent me a message and asked me to share it with you. Hello, Karen. Yes, these are trying times indeed for everyone. The media is certainly essential and has a very important job to do in informing. But also, programs like yours contribute a lot in keeping spirits and morale high for us and your many listeners. BAP Union is birthed in our home port of Callao, but not impervious to what is happening in our community. My Corps men have joined our health professionals on the front lines, and about half of our crew is out in the city augmenting Navy teams that are helping the authorities to cope with this emergency, enforcing curfew, patrolling, etc. Those that remain on board are certainly not idle. As you know, there is always lots of work to do on a ship. Plus, we are helping out in what we can, in things like providing berthing and hot meals to about 100 emergency personnel after they finish their watches every day. We are even using our heavy-duty sewing machine and sail-mending expertise to make face masks. Although we, of course, worry about our loved ones ashore, this kind of isolation is in fact akin to what is our normal life when we are out at sea. Moreover, you can say that managing isolation is precisely one of the things we try to instill in our young trainees during our cruises. Thanks a lot for your good work and the opportunity to connect with your listeners. Captain, on behalf of all our listeners around the world and from San Francisco, our hearts are with you. We appreciate the courage of your young people in the Peruvian Navy helping the people of Peru. Our young people of the National Guard are also helping us here in California with this pandemic. This is Karen Lyle of Sailsport Talk sending you our very best.
Do you have All right. Thank you so much, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with Karen Lyle live with you now, and we're efforting, as they say, to bring in Sir Robin Knox Johnston, one of the great sailors in the history of solo sailing. How did you, Karen, since we're here, we got a little time here before we can get Sir Robin on the phone. How did you find to make a connection with Sir Robin?
Well, we've been I've been in connection with the Clipper Around the World race. And actually, may I make just a comment that we have people in Peru listening for the little segment we're going to do on the BAP Union, and that's going to be played at the end of our segment at 9:54 instead of 9:37. So we have those little commercials. The Peru segment will be at 9:54. So back to Sir.
So you're saying that's the 3 minute break is what you're talking about?
Yes, because the 3 minute break we have some commercials instead of that we have, you know. Anyway, it's going to be at 9:54.
Okay.
So Sir Robin Knox was the founder of the Clipper Around the World race, and I have been in contact with the Clipper Around the World race. We just interviewed Will Stoker in the studio not too long ago, and also Wendy Peck when she was here with the Maiden, who was a captain in that. And Sir Robin Knox was the person who actually was the first person to solo circumnavigate, and he founded the race. And so his staff connected me with him for this interview.
What would you say about he did all this the first time in 1968 on a 32-foot Bermudan catch. What when I say Bermudan catch, what comes to mind, Karen?
Well, a catch is a boat that has two masts, and the one in the back or towards the aft of the boat is smaller than the one in the front, which is a little bit above center towards the bow of the boat.
Where is the longest you've gone solo, Karen?
Me? I'm not a solo circumnavigator. I am a team cruiser. I usually double hand. So I double hand with a partner. Which double hand, it doesn't mean it doesn't mean that we have two hands between us. It's four hands between us.
Got you. So have you put any more thought into where you, when you get out of Dodge and you have to get onto your boat and escape the alien apocalypse, where you're going to go?
Yes, and I've got my stash of Sauvignon Blanc and cocoa powder, so you're welcome to join me, and we can have chocolate and wine.
Not a wine drinker, but thanks for the offer. Anyway, plus there'd be a mutiny before we got to the Golden Gate, right?
That's probably true.
All right, Karen, what do you, when I say, there are things you hear and you think, oh, yeah, the Whitbread Round the World race, that's something that you always hear of. But I remember as a kid hearing that it would be, like every 3-4 years, but it wasn't exact. And then I heard now it's the Volvo race. Where did that all come together, the Whitbread?
Well, each race is basically hosted by a race committee and oftentimes sponsored by either a nonprofit organization or a yacht club, and then the names like Volvo or Rolex are usually the names of the sponsors of the race who help pay for part of the expenses of organizing the race. So there really are probably about 40 or 50. World races that are of note, and then just even along the California coast, there's over 500 races that happen every year just in California, and so then that's not all of the same level as the Whitbread Round the World race or the ocean races, but there's a lot of sailors.
Karen Lyles joined us, sailsport.com. We're shooting the S while we're waiting for Sir Robin Knox Johnston, and maybe we get him, maybe we don't. I think what's amazing. Yeah, if you know me, I'm a big history buff, and Sir Robin. Sorry.
Have we got him coming? Because if not, I can add him on my phone call if we're having difficulty connecting there.
You can add. Well, go ahead and try and add him, and then I'll whack poetic about something.
Okay, so you can shoot the breeze while I do that. Hold on a moment, please.
All right, I'll sing a song. Feelings, nothing more than no. One of the titles that Sir Robin Knox Johnston has, as I said, he's a sir. Now, this is all, as you say, you go up through the ranks, and I think it's interesting when you think about how a duke is beneath the prince, and then you go to earls and counts. And something I never thought of until recently, that when you say the county, that is like the earldom or the the princely realm. The county means the area that is run by the count. But we have county supervisors. The county, that comes from the term count. Anyway, when you are going to be a knight and you are knighted by the monarch, who, of course, all of my lifetime, maybe yours as well, has been Elizabeth Regina II. And yes, Beavis and Butthead, they do say Regina. It's like in Canada. But you get the title of knight bachelor. That is the first one you get. So you're knighted, but you are not inducted into the orders of chivalry. That's the next stage. But if you think, oh, I'm only a knight's bachelor. If you are a knight's bachelor, though, that is the oldest sort of knight. Knight's bachelor was introduced by Henry III. Henry III. Do you remember him?
Hi, Rick. I have Sir Robin Knox Knight, Knox Johnson on the, I'm saying knight, on the phone with me. And so you can say hello there.
Yes, Sir Robin, thanks for joining us. I was just talking about you being a knight of the realm. Can you talk about putting on your top hat and getting suited and booted when this all went down at Buckingham Palace?
Yeah, it's a pretty special occasion, extremely efficiently run. The nicest thing about it is that actually your wife becomes a lady, and she gets to sort of, she gets recognized for once for all the support she's given you.
That's great.
That's a very important thing, I'm going to say.
Yes, and we should mention that one of the reasons that he was knighted, he became the first person to single-handedly, non-stop circumnavigate the globe. That was in 1969, and then he went it again and did it in 2007. And I can just imagine, from your original Suhaili Bermudan catch to all the equipment that you might have had in 07, was it almost being on like a spaceship the second time around?
I think that's a very good parallel. It's rather like comparing the Wright brothers to Concorde, the difference that occurred in sailing yachts and equipment, and, of course, one of the most important things, satellites. Suddenly we've got instant communications, which we certainly didn't have 51 years ago.
Well, we're actually thanking the satellite that I was able to bring you into the show today.
Well, that's right. But I had the same problems at that time, Karen, with we just had trying to get through to you on Skype. It's all meant to work in theory and never bloody well does.
Right, right. Well, there's a lot of stress to the internet systems with everybody staying at home. Yeah. So, Robin, tell me an instance in one of your first trips around the world of what it was like to be in isolation for so long, because you were the only one on board and doing that journey by yourself.
Well, you know, Karen, someone asked me this the other day, because, you know, we've now shut down over here. And someone said, well, you know, what should people do? And I said, well, get a project. And they said, well, what project do you have? I said, I had a boat to sail. And that kept me very, very busy. I think people think you just sit back with a glass of gin and tonic in your hand, and that's it. No, you don't. It's not just you've got to navigate the thing in those days by the stars and the sun, no satellites again. You've got the constant maintenance. You've got the constant thinking of your tactics. No weather information, so you're watching the clouds, you're watching the barometer, you're watching the wind direction. You've got to feed yourself in the middle of it. You've got to get some sleep. So actually, you're extremely busy.
Well, you know, when you had your problems around Cape Horn with your self-stirring problems and others, and then you know that guys like Bernard Moitessier is on hot on your tail, what was that like, knowing that you couldn't see him, but you knew people were racing behind you like that?
Well, I think that gave one an impetus. I mean, you know, I discovered off New Zealand, when I spoke to journalists on a fishing boat, that I got a good lead, but he was still there. Some other people had appeared and disappeared. But, I got a lead, and I thought, this is too good to give up. I've got to hold on to this lead. I've just got to keep pressing on hard, 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 and keep this boat in one piece, look after her, make sure she can make the voyage, because no one knew if a boat would stay in one piece that long. And, you know, there were so many minor pressures in a way, because you accepted them at the time. You're set up for the competition. You're feeling competitive. You know, you want that fight.
A lot of times it is the relationship you have with the other competitors that keeps you going, isn't it?
Well, it would have been, Karen, if I'd had any contact with them. Before I sailed, I hadn't met any of the others, the other eight. Mm. I knew of some of them. I knew of Mateste, obviously. The others, Che Bride, I knew, John Ridgway. But the others were all new to me. We didn't have time to see each other before we left. We had no communication between each other while we were out there at sea. Bear in mind, all we had for communication was a single sideband radio set with very limited power. And you had to arrange in advance when you talk to each other so that you can both tune in at the same time. And, you know, that made it almost impossible anyway. So, to be honest with you, after my radio broke down south of South Africa, I had very limited communication. I couldn't transmit to anyone. I couldn't tell them where I was. I could listen in, but, you know, I couldn't actually respond to any calls being made to me.
That is a bit different.
We have time for one more question, and I know Peter Nichols, you've written some books, but Peter Nichols wrote a book about that race. Nine men set out to race each other around the world. Only one made it back. The book's called The Voyage for Madmen. You are the one that made it back. You don't seem like you're quite barking mad to me, Sir Robin. Do you think you have to be a little bit mad to do this?
I've always thought the title of that book was a bit slanderous, because I think, quite honestly, we're the sane ones. We're getting away from bureaucracy. We're getting away from all the pressures of modern life. We're dealing with nature in the raw. That's what we're focused on. We're dealing with the sea, which is unforgiving. And to be honest with you, I think that challenge is spiritually uplifting. It's something we can cope with. Oh, we didn't know if we could cope with it, but you felt you could cope with it. So I think, in a way, we're the ones who showed that we were far more normal than most.
There he is, Sir Robin Knox Johnston, sailing icon and legend. Thank you so much for your time, sir, and sorry about the technical problems. Glad we got you on. We really appreciate it, and we'd love to talk to you again sometime if you could.
We will certainly arrange it.
Yeah, thanks, Karen. Great talking to you.
Thank you so much. And, of course, Robin joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Get your quote on progressive.com today. Karen, good guest.
Yes, and listen in to the report on the BAP union off the coast in Peru.
All right, all my friends in Lima, stand by.